getting spoiled. Not every broadcast we get homemade pecans and, yeah. and pomegranates.
Those were delicious.
Y'all are going to be a hard act to follow.
Now can you show us how to do that with a pecan, John?
Oh, that would be a good trick.
Now, where did you learn this pecan, or this, you got me saying it, this pomegranate de-seeding trick?
My parents spent a couple of years in Afghanistan in the Peace Corps in the 70s. So when I found out my IT tech at our business a couple years ago was from Afghanistan, and found out his parents had just recently moved here to the States, I got my parents and his parents together, and this woman put on a beautiful meal. After the meal, she had bowls, full bowls for each of us of these beautiful pomegranate seeds. And assuming that she'd spent hours removing them from these pomegranates, I thanked her for this labor of love. Well, she says, no problem. It only took me a couple of minutes. I said, what? She said, I'll show you after dinner. So after dinner, she showed me this technique of removing.
Oh, wow.
Pomegranates in Afghanistan are like citrus in Arizona. They are a major export crop. In fact, when I went to Afghanistan, I remembered that I got up in the morning, my first morning in Kabul, Afghanistan, and they had a pitcher, a full pitcher, you know, with 2 quarts of this dark purple juice. They poured it into, and I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
Wow.
There was this, it was pure pomegranate juice. So it's a big crop there, and they eat them like we eat citrus here. And they have obviously discovered beautiful, this unbelievable technique for getting the seeds out quick.
Now, if you lost track of that or couldn't keep up with everything going on, as John was describing very, very well, how he was preparing this, cutting it,
smacking
it, beating it,
smacking
it, pulverizing
it. That's the technical
term.
There
is a video on YouTube that I created, and it's a couple of minute video. Just look up fast pomegranate seed removal on YouTube, and it'll take you right to the site.
I know Mom put it on the Rosie on the House Facebook fan page. You can find it there. On YouTube, it's under Integrity Tree Services YouTube channel.
Yep.
Excellent.
I tried it out before I put it on there. It is as easy as it looks.
Wow. And so, let's remember how good they are for you as well.
It wasn't one of those things that, oh, hey, look, it's easy, but it's somebody that's been practicing it 20 years and has it perfected.
Right.
Not one of those.
It was too good to be true.
First time you tried it, it worked.
I left Carol a great big bowl for breakfast.
Excellent. Let's start with Roland in Phoenix as we go through our callers at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Roland, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for the tip on the pomegranates. I want to plant a tree, and we've decided on a ficus. Can I plant them this time of the year?
Well, you know, ficus are kind of frost-sensitive, and ordinarily fall is a great time to plant trees, but I would be hesitant to plant a frost-sensitive tree at this time of year. If you plant it now and we get a frost in the next month or two, that could take it down completely and kill it. So with any frost-sensitive species, I would wait till the spring to do planting of that, of something like
that. For evergreens, we usually say December 1st is about the last time you want to be planting. Any time beyond that, it's probably better just to wait till spring. But your deciduous trees and shrubs, perfect time to plant those in December and January.
Appreciate the call. So there you go, Roland. Relax this Thanksgiving weekend. Hang out till, let's say, Easter, and then plant your ficus.
Yeah, that'd be great.
There you go. Let's see how we can help Marilyn and Anthem this morning. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Marilyn, and I live in North Phoenix. And 13 years ago, I bought a house. I have a swimming pool in the back. One of the nurseries told them I wanted trees along the back of that wall because there's a two-story there and I wanted to block out the two-story. They suggested I plant ficus trees. So I did, and they were beautiful, just absolutely gorgeous. They grew like weeds. You couldn't see the house. They were working great until I realized that I think they're going to take up my pool. So, and they were starting to take up the back fence, too. So I had them taken out. The area from the pool to the wall is not any more than 4 feet. Can you suggest something to plant there?
I think your tree comes back, Donna.
Well, and the one thing about the Palo Blanco is that it is a little bit wispy and light, and it's not going to give you quite the screening that you might be looking for that something like the ficus can provide. Sometimes, you know, we even look into a standard oleanders and things like that for screening in those situations. John, did you have something?
To try to get to a two-story height, that'd be a pretty tall challenge. I was thinking maybe something like a shoestring acacia, which have a really upright growth habit. They grow a lot taller than they grow wide.
Right.
So planting a couple of those on maybe, you know, 6-8 foot centers might be a good solution.
And that's one of the Australian species of acacias. There's some that are from Africa, some from Sonoran Desert, and some from Australia. So that those are nice tall trees. They're relatively clean. You know, all trees are going to have some litter, but yeah, that would also be a nice choice probably.
I know we're talking trees, so don't hang me for this, but I'm picturing in this 4 foot area, a trellis as tall as she wants it, and then some kind of vine, whether it's an evergreen or a deciduous vine, depending on where she wants her shade, would probably be pretty good option.
Yeah, it's a good option because then you don't have the problems as much with the roots, you know, getting underneath the wall and starting to break the concrete up.
I think that's a great idea.
There aren't very many trees that stay just 4 foot in diameter, too. So she has a very narrow area, and that's an excellent idea.
Right.
Well, I hope that helps, Marilyn, and best to you as you decide what to replant there. Jason and Gilbert wants to talk citrus. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a couple of citrus trees in my backyard. I've moved in about a year and a half ago, and I'm not sure how long they've been there. They produce a great amount of fruit, but unfortunately, I think they were neglected over some time before I moved in, and the branches just lay all the way onto the ground. Literally, I have lemons just laying all over the ground still on the tree. So I was just curious, when should I prune these? How much can I prune them without destroying the tree? Because like I said, they're laying all over the place.
Well, citrus really enjoy some benign neglect. They love us to leave them alone. But when they start getting so low that the branches are on the ground, good idea to probably start lifting those up. You can do that pretty much any time of year. Don't lift them up more than just if you can, if you have the room to let them lie just about on the ground. That's wonderful because those low branches protect the trunk from too much sun, and you'll get a lot of fruit on those lower branches. So just get them up off the ground, maybe 6 inches or so, and leave them at that height. I think they'd be real happy trees.
Now, you also had some points for citrus in December.
Yeah, well, we're starting to think about the frost danger. Lemons and limes are particularly frost sensitive, and they're some of the first to get fruit damage. If you have some lemons and limes on your trees now, and we know that there's a cold snap coming like next week, watch the weather. It might be a good idea to go ahead and harvest some of those lemons and limes on the outer parts and up in the tops of the trees, the most susceptible areas to frost, and go ahead and harvest them, take them, and save them before they get damaged in the frost.
Now, we're going to jump to Jim and Gilbert because he's got a question that I think pertains to a lot of homeowners right now. Jim, go ahead.
Oh, good morning, guys. So what I'm going to do, I need to construct a platform to put a winch, weighs probably 4 or 5 pounds, to string something between two trees. It's on wire rope. And I'm wondering, using a 16D nail to hold some 2x4s in place, is this going to cause harm to the tree, even though it's going to be up there, you know, for maybe three or four weeks or so?
So Jim's trying to outdo his neighbor on decorations.
Sounds like it.
He needs to put up a big Merry Christmas, ho, ho, ho sign strung between two trees.
Yeah,
will driving 16 penny nails in it harm the tree?
Well, it depends on what size branches you're pounding those nails into. You know, if you wanted to make a semi-permanent structure, you could even think about drilling through and putting a small eye bolt through the tree, which we do when we do cabling and bracing jobs on trees. Mm-hmm. Make it as small as you can, you know, so that large enough to hold up what you want to hold. That would allow you to come back and reinstall it again the following year. If you're just putting pounding a nail into a tree, generally that's not going to do a lot of harm to the tree. If you want to leave it in, it might be better than trying to pull it out and damage the wood and the bark that would require, you know, to put a claw hammer on it and pull that nail out. Might be better just to leave it in.
Especially if you plan on using it in successive years.
That's what I'm saying, and,
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Jim. We appreciate it. For anyone else out there hanging up holiday Christmas lights, a couple tips. Is there any reason he just doesn't use ropes to string it tight?
Yeah, or some nylon webbing. You know, tie a little piece of webbing around it with it's loose, so it'll protect the bark, and then attach whatever he's attaching to that nylon loop. That might be a much better solution.
We appreciate that Jim's cautious because you don't want to damage the bark too much on a tree because there is all the living tissues right underneath that bark. So, but a small wound like that usually is something it can handle. Just that you don't want to be stripping all the bark off it by any means.
Or putting something up that the limbs can't handle and they break.
Yes.
And, you know, you've all seen those where a limb breaks and it takes the bark halfway down the trunk of the tree. Right. Now that you don't want to create problems for yourself.
Well, also Christmas light installation. We don't recommend, you know, putting screws and screw eyes and all sorts of other things into the bark to put your attach your lights to. It'd be better to put in some landscape tape, that green landscape tape. You can wrap it around those around the branches, so it's a lot easier to take out of the tree and a lot easier on the bark.
Yeah.
As Donna said.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation as we move up to Cave Creek and Ira's yard. Welcome, Ira.
Good morning. How are y'all doing?
Very well, great. Thank you.
Good.
Good. We have a 12 to 15 foot cactus in our front yard. I sent pictures. Hopefully you're able to see them. And it looks to be cresting at the top. And because of its height and how close it is to the house, we're concerned about its stability. Obviously, in a monsoon or windstorm or something, we don't want it to blow over. And we've had some offers to actually donate it, to have somebody pick it, have a company come pick it up and donate it. But we'd prefer to keep it if we can get some type of assurance that it's stable and is not susceptible to get blown over. And we're not sure what type of specialty is an arborist or what have you that could give us an assessment of our cactus.
Well, that's a good place to start, getting a certified arborist to come and maybe take a look at it and let you know about its stability. Saguaro cacti are relatively stable in the soil. If they're grown in a natural environment, they root and anchor there from the time they're very small, and they're surprisingly stable even though they're tall. The crested saguaro that you have is of particular value. They're a kind of sought-after type of cactus, and I can see why people are knocking on your door offering to take it off your hands. I would really recommend hanging on to that if you can. It's probably a real contribution to the landscape, and I wouldn't give it away without some real thought.
Boy, I don't want to miss the opportunity. Did y'all, all you listening out there, did you hear what Ira did? He sent us a picture. We received it. Jennifer received it just this morning. It makes it so much easier to answer these questions. That cactus, in building and remodeling and landscaping, that cactus is worth thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, they are very valuable, especially
the crested saguaro. The crested one. What is the crest? What's happening there? It's not weakening the cactus.
No, it's a deformation of tissues, a fasciation, I believe. It causes one of the arms or many of the arms to flare out, or even the top of the tree to flare in a kind of a dramatic fashion. They have some of the entrance to the Desert Botanical Garden, if you want to go look at some.
John,
they're like a saguaro cactus, but they just look a little different. They have an interesting form.
You're old enough. The first crested saguaro cactus I ever saw was on Enver Gordon and Camelback. And the house had three tall saguaros.
Oh, yeah, and they dressed them up
as the three wise men.
Yeah, the three wise men.
And that crest was a perfect crown on one. And they did that for years, all through the 60s
they
and
did.
70s.
I remember that. Yeah. I was so disappointed when those went away. I think one of them died, and then it was only two wise men.
Oh, no.